Hi, this is Renee with a little pre-show editor's note. Later in the show, when Ray says the Ladybox books will be released in December, that is not correct. They are going to be announced in December, which is almost as exciting. Enjoy the show. Welcome to this week's edition of Books and Booze. This is Renee. I'm having a very strong rum and coke. We're here with Ray Alexandra, another Ladybox author. And how are you doing and what are you drinking, Ray?
I am drinking delicious Jameson whiskey on the rocks out of a Tupperware bowl.
Out of a bowl?
A Tupperware bowl, because
That's
I am
hardcore.
Currently inside a pet store.
Right. We've had people call in from a lot of strange places. Never a pet store.
The pet store, I work once a week in the pet store, and it was really the only place that had reception, so I just stayed here.
I think that's wonderful.
Are you drinking out of the bowl like an animal at the pet store would, or are you using it like a cup?
I am using it like a cup, but I could start lapping it instead if it would make you feel better. I'm sure it would comfort all of the cats that are in my vicinity currently.
Right. Don't give the cats any whiskey, though.
Oh, good Lord, no, I'm not good at sharing alcohol.
Jessica, what are you drinking?
I've got a Blue Moon Harvest Pumpkin Ale. I'm a happy camper.
Is this your first Blue Moon Pumpkin of the Year on Books and Booze?
No, it's not. I've had several.
Oh, no, you had one, like, in August or something.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly, but it is in my top favorites, and I'm happy to be having it today.
Oh, did you ever try the Orchata Blue Moon?
Yes, I did.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was really good.
Oh, I'm going to go buy some.
I'm not a beer drinker, but the only beer I will drink is Blue Moon, and sometimes they don't have the regular Blue Moon, and I'm not really paying attention to what it is, but they're always delicious, regardless of what the special flavors are.
I agree. It is my favorite. If I go to a bar or whatever, as long as they have a Blue Moon, I know I'm set. I love them. Yeah.
Always
I feel
refreshing.
Like Jessica's like the unofficial spokeswoman of Blue Moon.
I am. I wish they'd pay me, but they don't.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Or at least send free beer.
That would be better, probably.
Yeah, horchata and beer just seemed a little bit, like, scary. So I was happy to have someone else.
It's got a sweetness to it, so if you don't want your beer to be a little sweet, then don't do it. But it was yum. It was yum.
Well,
it's Blue Moon, you really just can't go wrong, because I think they're just trying to make fruity beverages for summertime, like, always, all year round.
They are. They're just trying to make you a nice, fruity little summer drink, no matter when.
Good. True. Let's talk about Ladybox.
Let's talk about Ladybox. Ladybox, which is making so many teenage dreams come true.
Yeah.
Finally.
Mine included, yeah.
Seriously. Like, if someone had said to me when I was 15, like, one day this magical thing is going to happen, I'd be like, what? Build me a time machine.
I especially love it because every time I mention that I'm really excited to get my lady box, my husband's like, yeah, me too.
Never gets old. Never gets old.
It really doesn't. I've said so many times, like, oh, I can't wait to see Constance's lady box. And everybody just looks at me. I'm like, no, it's
also, talking of Constance, I have some exciting news to pass on from Constance.
Because
coming up with this awesome concept and executing it and getting, like, wrangling 7 writers together to do this, I can't imagine the headaches involved with that. But she told me recently that she is starting an entire press, a Ladybox press, which will be releasing books.
That's so exciting.
And I tried to get some details out of her yesterday, but she's being very mysterious about the whole thing. And she just said there will be a wave of books in December. That will be the first.
Really, that soon?
Yes, that's it. I know, right? Like, I
That
don't
is
think she
so
sleeps.
soon. No, I don't think she does.
It's
I am,
impossible.
she couldn't possibly.
Yeah. I am very excited. I didn't realize it was that quick.
She's up to something. You might want to check back in with her.
I will.
Dang. I'm so stoked. Now,
That's really
I can.
exciting. And sorry.
Sorry. That was funny. I was saying, now I can look forward to more lady boxes in December.
More lady boxes. And also apparently our lady boxes have mostly been snapped up now. There's only about 20 left. So
Nice.
yeah. If you do want to see Constance lady box, now's the time to get it.
Yeah,
Limited
the first
supply.
day I was just waiting because I knew it was the 15th. I was like, it's going to be any minute now, any minute now, any minute now. Because I was terrified that they would all be gone like immediately, you know? So safely, I safely ordered mine instantly, and I messaged Renee. I was like, get your lady box now. So we're all
I was
going to have
so
to worried
same
about
me
it. And
too. Go ahead.
the like so desperate to, for this thing to happen and so desperate to see this thing, I actually messaged her at one point and I was like, do I need to order one of these? Or, and she was just like, you're an idiot. Like, you wrote one of them. Like, just shut up. We're going to send it to you. It's fine. I was like, I'm just checking because what if they sold out and I never saw it? And she's just like, shut up. So.
Yeah, I wrote her and I was like, are they going to be like when you say the 15th, is that like midnight the 15th? And she honestly just didn't really even reply to that. She's like, oh my God, you've got to stop. But I was like, I want to know, but
I
everything
now
is
have an
safe.
image of Constance at home just fielding just a stream of crazy,
Yeah.
crazy people sending crazy messages.
From all these girls having their teenage fantasies fulfilled and
True,
getting their lady
true.
box themes.
Yeah.
I
You know what I
mean, it's
hope, sincerely
what?
hope right now? That there is somebody who doesn't know what Lady Box is and like hasn't heard any of the other Lady Box episodes that's listening to us, not actually saying what this thing is or what it's about. We're just like Lady Box this, Lady Box that, fulfilling teenage girls' dreams, like our wildest fantasies coming true.
Yeah, we just should not explain that at all for the next hour.
Keep it very mysterious. So that the other 20 will go like that, just immediately after
Yeah,
the show
and they'll
airs.
all think it's porn.
They're gonna be. I don't. They're not gonna be disappointed. Just confused for a little
Just
while,
confused. Just confused.
and then enlightened and happy.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your contribution. All I've seen from of your lady box, the only thing I've seen of your lady box is the cover. I don't know what that means, but it's and the cover says, "How is this chick able to write about music?" Which I loved. I thought immediately, like, oh, that's got to be. How often do you hear that sort of? You're a woman journalist, or you're a woman that
Yeah.
writes about
Yeah.
music instead of just a journalist.
Well, the thing is, I think being a music journalist for all ladies is very different to being a male music journalist. But I think I happen to work in one of the least welcoming areas, which is like really, really heavy music, or at least was when I started out. Like that's what I did for 10 years, was just punk and hardcore and whatnot. But that title, How Is This Chick Able to Write About Music, was actually a direct insult sent to me underneath a blog that I wrote for SF Weekly. And there is actually 4 pages of the zine is just crazy things people have said to me in the comment section of blogs that I've written that are like threatening to my life even. That was one of the tame ones. So, because I wasn't sure what to call it, and I didn't want it to be too stuffy. And then when I was making the zine, I was typing that out and cutting and pasting, and I was like, oh my God, that's it. Thank you, mean troll person.
I
You've
love
given
it
me a
so
gift.
because it smacks of that, like, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, like my favorite songs are the songs where the person's like, neener, 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 you were an asshole, now I'm famous. And you're like, yeah, I named my fucking zine after that shitty comment. What now?
Yes, yeah, totally. The zine, when I started writing it, I think because I'd been wanting to do this for such a long time and never got around to it because I was always making silly novelty zines, because this seemed like such a lady-specific thing. And, I did enough in my teens of writing for fanzines that you know that there's going to be a portion of people being like, oh, my God, why is this chick whining? So I put off making it for a really long time, and then when Constance said what it was for, I was like, I get to finally do this zine about being a female music journalist versus a male journalist. And I ended up writing, I mean, all of our lady books are limited to 15 pages for consistency, and I ended up writing about 30, and had to cut a lot of it, and I realized, like, there is so much whining I want to do about this. But not just, I wanted something positive to come out of it, too. So the first half of the zine is basically, like, these are the things that happen to you when you're a female rock journalist that don't happen to men. And then the second half is basically saying just directly to young females, please don't let this put you off, because this is an amazing job, and I'm very blessed to do it. And once you're there and you're settled, it's fine. You just have to jump through some weird sexist hurdles to get there.
Do you think that just the internet in general makes it more difficult? Like, I know a lot of the websites that I read that have women writing or doing videos or whatever, there's always an element of, like, somebody has to be an asshole. And sometimes they're not even being, like, mean. They think they're being nice, but they're being nice in a way that kind of makes you want to vomit.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, nice tits. It's like, that's not what the video was about.
Right. And I don't know if you saw this recently. Jezebel just had to change how their comment section, the entire comment section works, because they were having such a massive problem of people posting, like, violent porn and other pornographic images. And then in the end, they just had to change it to, sorry, guys, we have to approve all of these individually, which I'm sure is a complete pain in the ass for the entire staff of Jezebel. But they had to just shut the comments down, which is lunacy.
And, like, I don't know how many people spend a lot of time on message boards, but I've been on a few since the internet, like, started being a thing, right? And that's the thing that always sucks, is if you hit a message board and, like, the Jezebel and Gawker and all those kinja sites, that's how they're meant to work. You know, it's like, kind of, there's an article and then a discussion. When they have to monitor it all the time and approve every comment, it screeches to a halt.
Yeah.
As far as, like, keeping things going, which, granted, it looks like, as far as I can tell, I try not to ever comment on anything on those pages, because it's just, you're just wading into something that can ruin your day. But
absolutely.
Looks like they're on top of it, and they do it really fast. So that's not a criticism on Jezebel, but it's just like the general, like, how much work they must be putting into keeping it up and keeping it that fast.
Yeah, I imagine it would be a complete nightmare, to be honest. Although, even though getting embroiled in those comment sections can be really awful, there was an incident a couple of years ago. I'd written something not even really bitchy or overly critical of Kanye West. I think I just made fun of the fact that he's hilarious on Twitter or something. But a lot of people got really upset really quickly, and I don't know how it spread so fast. But people in the comments section were really going to town, but none of them were spelling correctly. And a friend of mine from London saw this and just went in and just started correcting their grammar and arguing back with them with, like, these super intellectual statements. And it just turned into, I think in the end we had like 150 comments that were all prompted by my friend in London just, like, winding up these already upset fans and
it
making it even worse.
It is. But, you know, like, I used to comment a lot on Huffington Post before they made, like, every comment you made, like, a Facebook post. But I used to comment a lot on there, and I started realizing, like, what a complete fucking waste of time it is, because, like, you don't know any of these people. Like, when you're on a message board that has, like, the same couple hundred people,
frequenting it all the time, you kind of have an idea of how things are going to go. You go on something like HuffPo or Jezebel, and it's like you said, it could just be a bunch of people just like randomly just shouting garbage at you, half misspelled. Or if you make, like, I remember one time when I finally was like, that's it, I'm not posting on HuffPost anymore. I can't even remember who it was now. Oh, I said, it's embarrassing, but I said Gertrude Stein when I meant to say Gloria Steinem. It was just an honest mistake. And it just resulted in this dog pile of people being horribly abusive to me about how obviously I don't know what I'm talking about. So they're not the same person. Like, oh, fucking idiot. And like, you know, immediately I commented before they even responded, like, whoops.
Yeah.
But the thing that was crazy is they're like being really abusive. And when I basically told somebody, like, you know, this is really idiotic, like, you can see that I owned my mistake, they flagged that as abusive, and my comment telling them that the argument was idiotic got removed. And I was like, that's it. I'm done with internet comments.
You know what? I'm to the point where I don't look at comment sections. And when I was putting this zine together, I knew I wanted there to be examples of things people had said to me. And I went back to 2010. And I mean, I write for a lot of different places, but I thought, well, SF Weekly seems to be the one that I get the most abuse on, so, because it's the one that I write most frequently for. So I went back to 2010, and I started going through the comments, and I thought that I would have, like a span of several years in order to fill, like, a couple of spreads in the middle of the zine, and it was, like, 6 months of 2010, and I was done. Oh, and some of those comments were, like, lunacy. So I don't look at comments anymore. And, you know, I started out working at a huge rock magazine in the UK called Kerrang, and it was before websites were that much of a big thing. Like, people were still buying weekly magazines and whatever. I mean, it sounds absurd because this was the early 2000s. This is like 2000, 2001. But people just didn't have the same kind of access that they do now, and they didn't have smartphones, really. So people used to send me letters or emails, and we'd have a little debate, and it would be fine. And occasionally I would be bombarded because a band would post something on their website saying, we just had this terrible review, everybody write to this person and yell at them. But you can usually spot that stuff because they all just repeat the same thing because they haven't actually seen the magazine. But it used to be that you could engage in sensible conversation and exchange messages with somebody and actually have like a civil, oh, well, let's agree to disagree kind of thing. And I love a discussion, right. So that's cool. With comments, there's just no reasoning with humans at all. And, you know, there are people who want to go on and say something intelligent and engage you in a discussion, but there's always going to be just people in there yelling for the sake of yelling.
Yeah. Well, I run a website that doesn't usually get very many comments at all, and we had an article go viral. And it was so bad that not only did I tell the author not to read it, I removed myself from being notified when people commented on it because it was messing me up so bad. It was making me feel terrible, like, oh, my God, I've subjected this person to this kind of hatred and idiocy. And, like, I kept going in and, like, trying to explain, like, well, you don't even know, like, this, you know, this person is qualified in this way. And I was like, why am I doing, they don't give a shit, they don't want to hear it. They wanted to hear it, they would have read her bio and seen all of that information anyway. They just want to yell. So, it's scary.
One of the things that I have learned over my years of blogging is that different artists' fans will all find, I don't know whether it's coincidental or whether it's that certain types of people are attracted to certain types of artists, but there's always a pattern of the abuse. Like, if I write bad things about Lana Del Rey, which I do quite frequently because she rubs me the wrong way, if I write bad things about Lana Del Rey, everyone, like, there's a pile of comments that are just basically like, you must be ugly, I bet you're fat, you probably didn't go to your prom, and it's like that, and I didn't go to a prom because I'm British, but I don't know how to respond to that person. And then Kanye West fans are all just like, I want you to die. And then Odd Future I don't know if you know who Odd Future is. I'm discovering that they're not as big as I thought they were, but Odd Future is like a hip-hop collective. Anyway, whenever I get abuse from them, it's usually like, you should get raped, or like really weird graphic sexual abuse stuff. And it there are these patterns with fans of different genres where it switches. Like every single Lana Del Rey fan who I've ever had contact with has said, you are probably fat or ugly or both.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
It is really bizarre. And you know, like I know a few people who are brave souls doing like the online dating sites. And it's that weird pattern of like a guy will say something to them. And sometimes what he says is just horrible in the first place. Or like, you know, one friend, she's like, I don't want to date any men with kids. And they'll be like, well, I have kids, but I don't ever see them, which is, you know,
oh,
birth.
God. Not better.
I'm going to tell you up front, lady I've never met before, this is going to go fabulously.
Yeah. No, thank you. Or whatever. And then they'll come back and be like, whatever, you ugly bitch. That's like,
yeah.
Wait, hold on. If she's an ugly bitch, why were you messaging her in the first place? Like, what does that say about you? That's the dumbest insult that you could throw at somebody you were just hitting on.
So here's this other thing that I looked into for the zine. A friend of mine alerted me to it because she was working for Yahoo at the time. And she alerted me to this thing called the online disinhibition effect. And the only thing I can really find about it is a Wikipedia page, but it basically breaks down the fact that when people are online, due to a variety of factors, they lose all sense of social decency sometimes. And that's why we have to live with what we live with now. We're all online all the time.
It's so weird to me, though. Because it's like, online, you have the opportunity to really stop and think about what you're saying.
Right.
And yet
right.
Nobody does. I mean, like,
also,
we're all doing it occasionally, but some people, like, that's their life online, is just
right.
Vomiting out whatever comes to mind.
Right. And also, like, I've made friends online, which sounds
oh, yeah.
incredibly nerdy once it comes out of my mouth, but I have. I have friends who I count as, like, pretty good friends who I've never even been in the same room as.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, Jessica and I know each other from online, we met in person for the first time a year after we started doing the podcast.
Yeah. So
that's amazing. See, that's what the internet should be for.
And we
both
met our husbands
on the
internet.
Online.
Yes.
A writing website, so I believe
yeah,
in the internet to bring people together. It's great.
We never got this middle on that.
My thought currently is that there should be courses now for kids when they're going through like junior school or middle school or high school, like internet etiquette. Yeah.
Yes.
And also it's good for kids to understand that when they post things, that's there forever and this might have repercussions later, you know? I think that kind of thing is really important. And I think if we don't start doing it, like, shit's going to get really weird in the next 10, 15 years or so.
It is.
I
can't even
weird
imagine
that...
if that had been so prevalent when I was a teenager, the things that could possibly be out there. I'm lucky. You know?
Sure,
and also, like, I don't know how you guys had it in high school, but I was in an all-girls convent school, and it was hell. And very bitchy. And I can't imagine, like, being in that situation where, you know, you get to the end of the day at school, and you get to go home, and you get to, like, be away from those people, and you get to breathe a sigh of relief. Kids don't get to do that now.
No.
Yeah.
Find that really horrifying.
It's funny to me to see, like, older people, you know, just like the generation before, not necessarily
yeah.
that much, who, like, totally dismiss the online bullying things. They're like, well, you know, they're not even there. You can just turn the computer off and walk away. It's like, right, except for what you're not realizing is that means you can never leave. You
yeah.
can actually never just walk away, because if you want to be on Facebook or you want to play online games, you want to do research for school, or have an email account, or whatever it is, it's there in your face. You have to remove yourself from, like, all life after school or face the smartphones and all the other crap going on. It's like the
and
inescapable
also,
bullying.
If you are being bullied by somebody in high school and, you know, they're on Facebook, you're going to want to sit there and monitor it and see what's being said about you so you're prepared for the next day. At least that's how I imagine it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's catch 22. And I think, too, like, God, I've had people harass me on the internet as an adult, and it's like, I haven't had it like you're seeing, like, people, like, the Gamergate thing or anything crazy like that. But I've had, like, one person a couple of times, like, really just be dedicated to fucking with me online, like, all my email addresses, all my social media presences, whatever. And it is, like, for one person to be doing it, even, during that time, it's so defeating, and it's so, like, oh, my God. Like, you stop even being mad at a certain point and just being like, God, I just want this. Stop. It's so, So if you're like a teenager and you don't have life experiences to draw on and you don't have perspective really, and it's like a bunch of people that you have to see every day.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you make it through that.
I have no idea. I can't even imagine. Although I hear these days kids are a lot more tolerant than they used to be. So.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I wanted to say real quick, I know I'm completely derailing what we were just saying, but I did want to mention, you mentioned in the pre-show that this is not your first zine that you did.
No, and actually that ties into the fact that the internet is such a thing now. When I was in my teens, it didn't exist because I'm old, so... I knew when I was very, very young that I wanted to be a music journalist. Like when I was 11, I think I decided I wanted to be a music journalist. And my mother was very encouraging, and she said, okay, well, you need to start getting published, and you need to start getting published immediately or as soon as is humanly possible. So as soon as I was 13 and was able to string together sentences in a manner that other people might want to look at for a minute, I was like, okay, well, where can I do this? So it was a question of like going through the backs of music weeklies and finding ads for I'm doing a fanzine, do you want to write for it? And I started out doing that, and then I did that throughout my teens, and then once I got to like 16, 17 and went all punk rock skateboarder, whatever, I got involved with punk rock skateboarding fanzines. And wrote columns for those. But I didn't, like, put out my own zine that I sat down and did all on my own until about 4 years ago. And the zines that I put out then were, I think the last thing I did before the Ladybox one was 2 years ago, and it was a British slang dictionary. And that I put that out, basically, I made one for a friend of mine because I was like, I'm so sick of not being able to say things and have people know what I'm talking about. And the first one was popular amongst my friends, so I ended up turning it into a zine. But doing this Ladybox one was really nice because it was like, I never got to make my own Riot Girl fanzine. And this was like my version of a Riot Girl fanzine. So that's where the Teenage Dreams Come True part comes in.
That's really, I think it's really cool. Because now I'm trying to, like, I'm thinking of, like, three different people, but we've had people on the show in the last couple of years we've been doing this who've done zines, like, recently or incorporated zines into their work. Like, a Very Minor Prophet has all kinds of zine stuff in it. And it's kind of cool to see that just existing, I guess, because... It did. It's something that just did. It disappeared completely, like without a trace. And now it's kind of like you're seeing it in different places, popping up.
There is still definitely, I would say, zines in the U.S. in a way that there really are not in the U.K. Like met a girl online recently, just random through friends, whatever. And again, never met her. And we were talking about zines, and she said, "God, you know, I really miss them." And I realized, wow, there really are zero now in the UK. So I sent her a zine, and she, like, sent me this really sweet message. And she was like, this gives me faith in women, and it gives me faith in, like,
DIY stuff. And it's like, this little fanzine meant like the world to her. And it wasn't one that I'd made. It was just a random thing that I picked up in a bookstore. But I was like, oh my God, I need to send this Gilmore zines. Like, she really misses it. Like, people who were involved in that, I think there's still a real love for it.
Oh, there actually. For this last Christmas, which is almost a year ago now. Oh, God, the year. Anyway, I got the Riot Girl collection for my husband as a gift because I was like, oh, my God. Like, it was for him, but it was also like, we're both going to enjoy this.
Yeah. I have that book, too. When they released that, I was like, yes, because when I was a kid, you know, I didn't have access to Riot Girl stuff.
Exactly.
Like, we had one Riot Girl band, which was Huggy Bear. I mean, the UK now. We had Huggy Bear, who I didn't particularly want to listen to very much. It just didn't do it for me. I really backed them, but it's just like, I don't really like the songs that much. And I remember there was a girl up the street from my house who made a Riot Girl fanzine, but that was like my only contact with it. And I used to think about, God, how wonderful would it have been to have been involved with those women at that time in the early 90s and been in the right place at the right time. And so when they released that collection, it was just like, oh, Jesus, finally I get to see it, you know?
Absolutely, yeah, I felt the same way.
That's good.
So I just want to bounce off this for a second because I don't want to run out of time before we talk about the important issues of the day, which obviously number one important issue of the day, speaking of Riot Girls, is the possibility of Kathleen Hanna and Miley Cyrus collaborating.
This to me is potentially the greatest thing that has happened like this century. Like Miley Cyrus, I've been writing about Miley Cyrus a lot in the last year because I'm so aggravated by how she's treated in terms of what she does on stage versus other female pop stars who get to be naked as much as they want and get to shake their asses as much as they want because they do it in a very submissive, sensual, like pre-approved way.
Yes.
That's enjoyable
right.
for men to look at. And when Miley Cyrus does it, she's kind of making fun of it, and she's pulling ugly faces, and she's being really vulgar, and she's pointing at her crotch. Like, and people don't like it.
Thank
and
you.
I think Kathleen Hanna has probably been looking at this the same way that we've been looking at this and going, holy shit, like, this is the fourth wave. This is the new wave. This is, like, Miley's not taking shit from anyone. She's very creative.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very empowered, and I think she's very empowering for girls, even though, yes, she is, like, spreading her legs and bending over and all that kind of thing. The way that she does it is not submissive. And I've been very frustrated recently with Beyoncé, who I always considered the most feminist of pop artists, is, you know, you can put a big banner behind you that says feminist on it, but if you're rolling around on your stage and only singing about boning your husband, it kind of undercuts it a little bit for me.
Well, not just that, but incorporating lyrics about, like, famous domestic violence cases in a song about boning your husband.
I forgot that part, but yeah.
Probably for the last year now, yeah, I think that's a safe time frame. I've slowly been coming around to the idea that I think Miley Cyrus is genius.
Yeah,
you know, she went from being this thing, like, sort of a joke or whatever, and coming to her own. And after I saw her on Saturday Night Live when she hosted, I was like, holy shit, who the fuck is this girl? She's awesome.
Yeah.
And so we started paying attention to her more. And yeah, I like Miley Cyrus, which is something I never thought I would be able to say.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
you know?
Go
ahead.
No, you go.
See, the more she pissed people off and, like, the more people were kind of making idiots of themselves, because I'm sorry, you sound like an idiot when you say that Miley Cyrus is trashy because she was wearing very little clothing, when that's, like, every woman on stage.
Who's complaining about Rihanna? Like, Rihanna's, like, the worst female role model for teenage girls and 10-year-old girls I've ever seen in my life, and no one complains because they're like, oh, but she's so sexy.
My
right,
favorite
you know?
thing, though, is somebody said, somebody, like, there's a conversation among, like, punk rock guys, and they're going on and on about how vulgar it was, and it was like, dude, okay, get the fuck over yourself. You cannot stand here and say that she's wrong because she's being vulgar if you ever listen to a single fucking punk rock song ever.
Yeah.
I saw Jack Grisham's penis at Warped Tour because he just felt like it was a good idea to show it to a crowd of teenagers. Because, come on, teenagers are the only people at Warped Tour. You know?
I will say this as a side note, and it is a side note. I interviewed Jack Grisham a few years ago at his home, and he's one of the craziest people I've ever met in my life, but in a good way. Like, I really enjoyed his company, and he has, like, the best stories ever. But he's inappropriate sometimes because he's crazy. Like, I mean that quite literally.
I met him recently as well, and he's super nice, but you're right, really crazy. And kind of in a surreal way. But it's just one of those things, it's like, you can't come from that. Like, I can't come from TSOL singing about fucking corpses and Jack Grisham showing his penis to a bunch of teenagers and then look at Miley Cyrus and go, oof, she's too vulgar.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's all about double standards. All of this is about double standards. It's double standards between men and women. It's double standards between a certain type of woman and another type of woman. And Miley, I think, is very smart, and she knows exactly what she's doing. And more power to her. I think the older she gets, the more she... Like, okay, I will say that the one critical thing I've written about Miley recently was the Wrecking Ball video. Just because I felt like it could have been done so much better, and really the licking of the sledgehammer was just a touch much for me.
Yeah,
But I blamed Terry Richardson for that, because Terry Richardson is a really weird, perverse human, and I felt like she's trying to get in with, like, the cool, subversive people, but sometimes she's going in the wrong direction. So for her to do something with Kathleen Hanna would just be ideal, because it's the right type of subversiveness that is going to, like, nurture Miley and get her to a better place and not, like, turn her into some girl rolling around on the floor licking sledgehammers.
Yes.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, too, is that I think people are so quick to, like, they want a permanent... I think 100% of the problem people have with Miley Cyrus is they want to make a judgment on somebody and have it stick. So she started out as, like, the Disney pop princess, and then she started doing, like, this, like, really upfront, like, graphic show, and that's like, oh my god. And then she made a couple of mistakes, and now it's like, oh well, I'm latching on to these mistakes and I'm just gonna fucking blast her. But the reality is that she's like, she grew up in front of the entire country, the entire world, and she's figuring it out now. And I love that she's not afraid to piss people off, and she's not playing by the normal pop rules. I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, those are her handlers. It's like, no, man. Her handlers want her to be Christina Aguilera, not what she's doing.
And I think if her handlers, if this was something that was really premeditated, she wouldn't have shaved her head. She wouldn't have a bunch of finger tattoos. This is not what the handlers want, because it isn't safe.
Right.
Yeah, and it's not reversible, the tattoos.
No.
I feel like her brand of sexuality is not for someone else, it's for herself, and I think that's the biggest difference there. She's not doing something to please someone else or make someone else turned on. She's doing something because it makes her happy and she likes it. So
that's why people hate it so much.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if I had to show my daughter, who's too young to be really watching, like, any music videos, but you know, if she were older, if she were a preteen, and I had to show her, like, a sexy music video, I would want it to be the woman who's in control of her own sexuality and is doing it for her own reasons, not the woman who knows if I shake my ass a certain way and I pout into the camera and I do what they tell me to do, that's going to sell records because guys want to fuck me.
Yeah. It's all male gaze stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Kathleen Hanna could bend over on stage and pull her skirt up and there be a song underneath, and there was nothing about it that was like, oh, hey, boys. You know, like, we all knew who that was for, and it wasn't for men. And I think that's really beautiful.
I agree.
Yeah, and I think, it's so funny, that reminded me, like, we were watching The Punk Singer, and there's like a clip of Kathleen Hanna performing, and she's like, here are my tits, this is my ass, and my husband just started cracking up, because it's not, I mean, nothing sexy about it. It's just like, it's in your face, what are you going to do about it? I love it.
You know what, this is a funny side note, and one that's also related to Constance, because this is a mutual friend of ours. A mutual friend of ours used to be a stripper, and she would prefer the term dancer, but for the purposes of this recording, I'm just going to say stripper, so we're all clear. She'd asked me to go to a club that she was dancing in when we were on a road trip in Oregon, and I said, I find strip clubs very depressing. I really don't want to go. And she said, oh, you know, please, you know, I'd really like the moral support. So I was like, okay, all right, fine, let's go do this. And she knew I wasn't really enjoying myself and buying me a lot of PBR to try and get me through the evening. And at one point she was completely naked except for a pair of like huge giant stripper heels. And she swung around a pole, and it happened to be quite quiet at that point on her stage, and no one was really paying that much attention because she wasn't on the main stage. And so she started walking around the circumference of the stage, and just like she bent over, stuck her ass in the end. She was like, this is where poop comes from. And then she turned around to somebody else and she was like, this is my vagina, this is where babies are made. And then she did the robot.
Oh my God.
I love
completely
it.
Completely naked. And she pointed to me and she was like, that was for you. And I was like, thank you. This just made my whole year. Like, seeing somebody go from doing super sexy stuff to making fun of her own body, which is beautiful, by the way, and then doing the robot completely naked in stripper heels was, like, one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It was amazing. So anyway, sorry, that was a side note. I just wanted to share that story with you.
Oh, that was amazing. I'm so glad you shared that.
But yeah, it was. I don't even know if the girl in question was that familiar with Bikini Kill or anything. But yeah, Kathleen Hanna doing the these are my tits and this is my ass. Like very, it was very shocking at the time too. Whoa.
Yeah.
I feel like it's hard to follow that, and it's hard to want to leave this line of conversation. I'm really happy here.
I know, me too. This is my happy place.
But I know, Jessica, you wanted to talk about the Katy Perry, Taylor Swift catfight article.
I do want to talk about that. And you know what? It kind of all ties together.
It does.
Because
this is the thing. Everything that I write is kind of, it all ties together. And some weeks I have to be like, okay, I need to not write about this again. Because even though it's different people involved, I'm saying the same things. And my editors are going to start getting mad at me soon.
No. Beautiful every time. I saw all these articles. I was like, yes, we have to talk about all of them for the entire hour, even though I knew that wouldn't work.
Right.
But you have the article about Taylor Swift and Katy Perry having their little argument together and whatever. And go ahead.
Yeah,
no, you do it.
No, I was just going to say the first thing that popped into my head is like Taylor Swift having to say this isn't over a boy. Like that was one of the first things she emphasized, this isn't over a boy. And it was still played up immediately. I think almost because she said this isn't over a boy, everyone immediately went, aha, John Mayer. It must be.
It really is over a boy. Yeah.
With Taylor Swift, everything is over a boy. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, that's her detractors. Like, that's their favorite thing to fall back on is that, you know, she's just Bapit and everything's about boys.
Well,
I think she's moving away from that now, and possibly because she's sick of hearing that.
Probably, yeah.
Well, I mean, to be fair to her, she started out in the country market where just about every song is either about, like, getting drunk and partying, which she was a teenager, and that wouldn't have, like, looked good, or it's about breakups.
Yeah.
So she's singing about breakups like every other country artist, and people are like, oh, all she ever does is sing about boys. It's, like, weird. Like, she was being criticized for writing her own songs instead of buying to someone.
And also, she sang about a lot of breakups, but she was so articulate about it, and it was from such a teenage girl perspective. I think those were really valuable songs, but she's, you know, been painted into a corner now. And of course, I mean, even if she hadn't always written songs about boys, this Katy Perry, Taylor Swift thing, it, you know, they're Taylor Swift is basically saying this is about work. Like, she screwed me over in work because she hates me for some reason. And everyone went, oh, they're fighting over a man. And it's like, but that's not just, that's not what happened. Like,
yeah.
Why is it bizarre? It's bizarre.
First I want to say, because I find Katy Perry went on record pretty recently saying some, talking about Miley Cyrus, about how, you know, oh, she just thinks that the girls, the young girls in music should put their clothes on.
Oh, God.
And I was like, are you kidding me, Katy Perry? We've seen you, Katy Perry.
Katy Perry is naked on a goddamn cloud on an album cover. And she was naked on the cloud on the album cover way before she made those comments. Like, everyone, like, feels like they need to be naked. But to be fair, Katy Perry in that interview just sounded like a crazy person. Because she's like, everyone thinks they need to be naked, but I'm not going to be naked until, like, I run out of good ideas. But I was naked once. But then, and she just lost herself in mid-thought. Like, wait a second.
Taylor Swift isn't doing, did I miss Taylor Swift doing nudity? I have friends who are really into Taylor Swift. I feel like I would have heard about it.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was more a comment on, like, what Miley Cyrus is doing. But, yeah, it was just so out there, like, so non-self-aware that I just had to stop and go, why? But, yeah, the basic idea that why I hate seeing girls in the same industry or the same group or anything have to have these sort of what's going to be labeled as a catfight.
Yeah.
You know, what I think is interesting, too, though, is, like, if you look at, like the female, the women that were, like, breaking in the rock scene, like, in the late 70s, early 80s, and they do interviews now, and they're like, oh, well, you know, everybody said that there was this huge rivalry between me and so-and-so, but we never had a problem with each other.
I mean, it's been going on forever. Like, Britney versus Christina, that was another one that was like, oh, they hate each other. Like, they're probably pals. Weren't they on the Disney Club together or something? Or am I thinking of Justin Timberlake?
Yeah, I think so.
They just had different music, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I think, like, it's funny because it's hard to figure out, like, how much of it is manufactured. Because, like, you know, yeah, Taylor Swift did say, like, oh, well, this thing happened and it upset me. But I wonder how hard the person interviewing her pushed to get her to say something like that, you know?
Well,
like, there were rumors that something happened.
It was a Rolling Stone article, and generally with those cover stories, they'll spend a couple of days with somebody. And if you spend a couple of days with somebody, then they do let their guard down, and they are a little bit more honest with you because they're just kind of living with you for a minute. So you see things that it's not like on a press day you go in and you do a 20-minute interview and they're on their guard and you're very polite and then that's it, you know. I think if you're with somebody for a couple of days and that journalist is traveling with you and you're having lunch and you're having drinks, then at some point you're just going to start chatting with them like they're a pal, you know.
Right.
I would imagine that's probably what happened.
But to me, like, I can just almost see it being like a throwaway, like, quick, like, oh, yeah, one time this thing happened, and then like, dollar signs, and the interviewer is like, oh, really? Tell me more about this.
Because they get to feed into that thing that everybody wants to read about, which is girls are bitches, girls fight with each other, we're catty, that, you know, all of this, and it's,
you know what, the kind of so on a similar subject, that is very tired, but there's, I mean, I was working in a magazine and I had been sent out to do a story on Warped Tour, and I'd done a bunch of those stories where you just go and you interview who else is backstage and you just get a bunch of sound bites and you pin it all together and it's a thing. I had a couple of scheduled interviews, and two of them, there'd been talk in the magazine in weeks previous about these two bands having a feud and everything's really tense. And when I showed up for an interview with one of those bands, they said, we kind of don't want to talk to you because of this feud nonsense. Like, we're buddies. Like, we're hanging out. We're on the same tour. We're friends. And I was like, I am not going to do any of that. I don't know about any of that. I've never written any of that. Like, I want nothing to do with it. They said, fine, you know, other people know you here. They vouched for you. Fine, we'll talk to you. Same thing happened with the other band. I turned in my story, nothing about it at all, other than like a sentence saying there's no feud here. When the article went to press, that sentence was taken out, and inserted in its place was a paragraph saying, ooh, imagine the tension between these two bands being parked so close to each other when this just happened. And I'm like, my name is on this. My name is on this. And I had to contact their press people, their PR people, and just be like, I didn't do this. And I please pass on my apologies. Like, I'm so sorry. But then you lose credibility because people don't believe you. That
right.
There are editors who will do that kind of thing and will put a twist on things and will put a spin on it. And it is, it sucks for everybody. You know, it sucks for the writers, too.
If they do believe you, if you come back for the same publication, they're like, well, yeah, you might be the best person in the world, but your editor is going to fuck us.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And they don't know that. You know, you take it with a grain of salt. And if I was a band, I would be super paranoid about, you know, having journalists around too long or making friends with journalists. And it's because of things like that. But there's always going to be editors who do that kind of thing. And there's especially, I mean, those would be between two bands of men. And when it's between two groups of women or two female artists, it's going to happen even more just because that's what happens. That's what's always happened.
I'm sorry. I'm distracted because I just, like, on my computer popped up sexy Halloween costumes, and there's a sexy jellyfish costume.
Well, why wouldn't there be?
Please describe in detail what that looks like.
I don't even know where to start. Well, first of all, the eyes of the jellyfish are obviously over the breasts.
Oh, of course.
And then it's mesh, and then a tutu that, you know, like a stripper tutu. And then it has what appears to be plastic streamers.
Wow, that's lovely.
You've officially gone too far.
I've decided.
Officially, I'm going to go home and Google sexy jellyfish because I need to see this.
I'm going to include it in the
in the notes?
In the episode notes so everybody
Fantastic.
Can experience it.
Then I will not Google. I will wait for the surprise.
Yeah, I'm bookmarking. There's a deluxe sexy goldfish too. So
what do you get with the deluxe set? A stinger?
I don't know. It's exactly the same, but a different color. So I don't.
I hope you get to taser someone. I hope I get that.
I'm just a taser. That'd be awesome.
Wow. We are getting so close on our time right now, and I hate it. But there's one very special thing that I did want to mention. You listened to our episode with Constance, apparently, and heard our discussion about the Ewoks.
Yes, I did. And I want to bring something up about the Ewoks because
It
was stated, I don't remember who said it, but it was stated in that podcast that only people born after 1980 are pro-Ewok.
I was born
in 1978 and I am pro-Ewok.
Yes. Okay. Now, I did say that. That was the generalization that I had heard. I feel like you're close enough to the border that's still kind of holds true. But I'm happy to have you in my camp because Ewoks are the best.
I actually, like, my dog is a strange mix of things, and people always ask, like, what do you think she is? And I'm like, well, I know she's part Pomeranian, and I don't know what the other thing is. So I like to think that I manifested her while watching Return of the Jedi because she looks just like an Ewok.
See, I have a pug, and he looks like an Ewok.
See? Mm-hmm. It changed all of our lives forever.
They're beautiful, and I love them.
I think if people say mean things about Ewoks and say that Ewoks ruined that trilogy, they're mean-spirited. And they're just saying it because no one wants to, like, dudes don't want to be like, oh, yeah, I love those cuddly little guys. Like, it takes kind of a big man to be like, yeah, I love teddy bears, you know?
Yes.
I think it's just posturing. I think secretly everybody loves Ewoks.
I think so, too.
I think it's a lie.
The way you said
they're
that.
They're heroes. They're goddamn heroes.
They are. And, oh, you describing the death scene, by the way, was I had a tear in my eye.
See? Exactly. They're the only hero to, like, they're there and they fight and they die right on camera. Oh, it's tough, guys.
It tugs at my heartstrings every time.
You can't deny them.
No.
Okay.
So I'm good. I'm glad that we talked about that. I feel better.
So am I.
No. Can we just do this every Friday or something? Like,
yeah.
Get
yeah.
together, have drinks, hang out,
yeah.
have some girl talk.
We'll
I would
yeah.
like that so much. Let's invite a lot of people. Let's bring
yeah.
party lines
back. We could
back.
Do that. We literally Seriously. Could do that. We can have, I think, up to like 1,000 people on this line. Not that I think that would be productive. But we could totally do a party line.
But you could, that would be amazing. And I would call it all the time. And I would give you
yeah.
money for that.
I don't even
it's
want
so
money.
I just want the opportunity to talk. You know what? I know that was a joke, but if you think about it, when you're having like a lady crisis and there aren't any other ladies around, like books and booze line would be the greatest thing in the world, I think.
It would.
Let's call that project officially in development. We are out of time, though. And we have to talk about our sponsor, who is once again Miss Massacre's Guide to Murder and Vengeance by Michael Paul Gonzalez. And we spent a lot of time talking about badass women who don't exist for male pleasure, and if there is one woman in this world that could give a shit about how pleasurable she is to the eyes, it is definitely our protagonist, our heroine in Miss Massacre's Guide to Murder and Vengeance. It's a super cool book. And I just found, because I've been unpacking my office, I just found my awesome shotgun shell, Miss Massacre shotgun shell thing. So,
isn't it
pretty
cool?
Stoked about that.
I love my shotgun shell.
I'm also sorry that my dog just barked in the middle of the important bit.
Oh, it's lovely.
It was so cute. It was like a little squeak. I'm down.
Okay, good.
And music this week is by Square People, and it's called I'm Not Nervous. And then, as we always do, we'll link up all the stuff we talked about. We'll link up where you can read these awesome articles that Ray wrote. We'll link up Ladybox. Maybe there will be some left by the time the show airs. Maybe not. I don't know.
You can get into the Ladybox quick.
And everybody... run to your local internet webpage, because it's not available in a storefront, and get your lady box. Anyway, that fell apart really fast. Thanks for being on the show, Ray.
Thank you so much. It's been really fun.
Oh, but yeah, this is great.
Permission, but I hate it.